Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Comedy Arcade, part friendly panel show, part vicious competition, where contestants fight with their best anecdotes on mystery topics generated through a trusty bingo ball. I'm Viv Slayton, host of the show, spirit of the bingo balls, and games master. Points will be awarded for originality, amusement value, and my general caprice and mood on the day. The contestant with the most points at the end of the game wins, but their opponents will be granted a few cheat codes along the way, just to keep it interesting. Okay, we are recording. Welcome to the Comedy Arcade. We have three brilliant players. It is a rock legends music special today with people that I've wanted to get on for ages. They're all looking a bit puzzled as to how they've all got there, which is quite humble and quite sweet. So we will start with introducing Sean Smith from one of my favourite bands. From
your
new band's all right, but the Blackout was bloody good.
That does seem to be the general consensus across the board. Like, everybody's like, oh, the new band's, yes, all right, yeah, but I love the old one. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
You think it was about being in the right place at the right time as well, on that sort of Sackville's music scene. So, and now a podcaster, his podcast, Sapnin, has the people that I would like to interview if I knew enough about music, basically, but I have to just do a comedy podcast. So.
Funnily enough, I don't know that much about music, and I still get to interview him. What you need to do is you get a co-host who does all of the research and then you just come on and talk bollocks like I do.
It's genius. I need a co-host. Are you free?
Yeah, but I can't do any of the work. I don't know how to do it. So me and you would just be talking bollocks and we need a third to help to sort it out. So, but thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming. Thank you so much. We've got the man, the legend, the journalist, writer, comedian, Ian Stone. How are you?
Yeah.
Fine, I'm all right. Journalist? When did I become a journalist?
Well, you're a broadcaster. I'm a bit old school. I consider anybody who's in the news in any way to be a journalist.
Right. Well, thank you then. I suppose I have done a bit of that in the past. So thank you.
There are some notable exceptions. But.
Yeah. I have no journalistic training. But I tell you, I've got a lot of opinions, though. So hopefully that will help.
Well, there we go. You're very much of the new school of journalism. So that's fine. And again, rock legend, comedian, again, author. You've all got so much going on. This isn't fair.
The irony is, I actually am a journalist, so I kind of feel like you may have got your cue cards mixed up.
Well, no, but I talk about the things that I know you for, and you wrote the Terry Pratchett book, which is incredible.
I wrote a Terry Pratchett book, and not like a Terry Pratchett book, like one of his books. I wrote a book.
Yeah, he wrote Going Postal. He ghost wrote Going Postal.
Terry Pratchett wrote most of his books, I understand.
I wrote a book about Terry Pratchett, yes.
There we go. That I've read. That is the only book about Terry Pratchett that I've read, not by Terry Pratchett. So there we go. All right, let's go. I just really like doing this to collect my thoughts. Okay. Right. It is teenage behavior. What were you guys like as teenagers? I mean, I can imagine, but let's see if I'm right.
You can absolutely imagine what I was like as a teenager because you know me as I am now, which is exactly the same. I've even regrown over lockdown. I've even regrown my teenage haircut. I've not had a ponytail since I was 19, but I've got one again now. Like, lockdown has given me back the long hair that I treasured in my youth when people used to shout Umbop at me in the street because I looked like the guitarist from Hanson, which isn't even the coolest member of Hanson.
Who is the coolest member of Hanson in your opinion?
What is the cool member of Hanson?
Well, the kid was pretty good.
I want to say Zach.
Zach? It was Zach, Isaac and Taylor. We all know.
Yeah, don't pretend.
They were all children as far as I could see.
The guitarist was the older one and was basically, you had the young cute one, you had the middle one who people thought was a girl and actually was quite pretty, and then you had the older one who no one really liked.
Which one did you look like?
Apparently I looked like the older one.
Right, okay. I've been told I look like a Jewish version of Chris de Burgh. I don't see it myself. I don't even know what that would look like, to be honest with you. But
you.
Me, I guess.
We're all focusing on the webcam on the eyebrows now.
Yeah.
But no, it's not quite there. There is a certain Christopher Burness. There is a little bit.
We all look like someone, though, don't we? Isn't that the case?
Yeah.
Yeah, I look
never who you want either. Never flattering.
No. Although you say that, I was at the Glee Club once in Birmingham doing a gig, and somebody came up to me and went, "Do you know who you look like? Tom Cruise." Take that look off your face, Vix. And it was a moment.
I can see that.
Well, there's a bit of nose thing going on, but I think it's a stretch, to be honest.
I mean, I haven't got my glasses on, but
even with your glasses, it won't make a huge amount of difference. Then she says, "This is my first night out since my husband died." Right, he fell down the stairs. She said his eyesight wasn't very good, and he fell down the stairs. And I said, "Well, your eyesight isn't all that good if you think I look like Tom Cruise."
Yeah, you might want to get a rail or a stanner.
Yeah, do you know what she said then? She goes, "Do you know what my favourite restaurant in Birmingham is? Little Chef." And we went, "Why?" And she went, "Because when you get the food on the plate in front of you, it looks exactly like the food on the photo." I know this is not about teenage behaviour, but I'm just right away.
Do you remember that week on Facebook where there was like once somebody decided there was going to be a change your profile picture to the person that you look like week? And what we learned is that everyone has a massively high opinion of how attractive they are.
For mine, see, every time someone says, "Oh, you know, name the celebrity you look like," I just go with Sonia of EastEnders. Because it seems we've got this big jaw thing together and we look surprisingly similar. I think I'm a little bit hairier than her, though.
It's not miles out, is it? I mean, I sort of see what you mean. I mean, it's not, you're not, so you don't look like Sonia from EastEnders. But
too late. No.
We politely nodded to Christopher and then you went and did that. Wow. Yeah.
There is a bit of Sonia going on. I wouldn't shout it at you in the street.
Since I grew my hair, again, people keep telling me I look like Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, which I cannot abide.
Yeah, you do look. I can see that. Yeah, sorry.
This is turning quite spiteful.
Yeah, I'm going fully, you know. Mark, you do.
Yeah. I actually thought you were actually Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall. I'm surprised. You had like records and music. I thought it'd be food knocking about behind you.
Yeah, apparently all of his rooms are full of food. He doesn't own anything else. He just lives in one River Cottage. Is just one giant
massive
larder.
Fridge. Yeah, as I've heard that. You know what I did when I was a teenager? What's the thing? It doesn't matter about the rules. Fuck it. When I was 19, I was going to a party. I was walking down the road, and my mate Simon pulled up in this car, and the party was about half a mile up the road, and I said, "Can I have a lift?" And he went, no, the car's full, but I'll give you a lift on the bonnet," right, is what he said. Now, you know, when you're like, I'm 58 now, and obviously if somebody says to me, "Do you want a lift on a car bonnet?" I go, no, I'd rather stay
alive.
Are
you all right?
I was 19. You know, when you're 19, you do stupid shit. I went, yeah, go on then. And I got on the bonnet, and he took off at what felt like about 100 miles an hour, but it was fast anyway. And obviously I shit myself. And so I sort of laid on my front and I was holding onto the windscreen wipers and he turned them on. So I was, you know, trying to, and he's going, get down. I can't see the road, right? Because he was quite a careful driver. And then we just sort of screeched to a halt and I rolled off. I mean, I could have died. I could have died, really.
Did it look cool though? Do you think like James Bondish or? No.
If I'd have jumped up and chased after someone, yes. But I went, "What the fuck are you doing, you lunatic? Slow down." I wasn't happy.
What did you think would happen though?
I thought I'd have a gentle ride to the party, and he just dropped me off like a good person.
Were you drunk at the time?
I have no idea. I just, you, the point is, you make stupid decisions when you're a teenager, right?
Yeah.
You're lucky he didn't pop the bonnet and just catapult you across the road.
Eject the seat off.
Yeah. I like the idea of passers-by going, oh, look, there's Tom Cruise.
There's Tom Cruise.
Mission Impossible.
It must be.
Well, he does do and stunts, he doesn't he?
He must be.
Stunts. Unbelievable.
They must be filming. Yeah.
Well, I heard in his last film he tied himself to the side of a jumbo jet, so this just stands to reason, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah. Why would he not just drive at 60 miles an hour down a road in Edgware just to go to a party in a Triumph Herald?
It sounds very glamorous. Sean, what were you like as a teenager?
Nothing much has changed, really. I think what happened was, like, I was in Merthyr College doing a media studies course, as every utter idiot does. And I started doing that, and then my band surprisingly did quite well, and I never had to grow up in that period. So, like, I was in the band for 13 years. So, like, I'm 37 now, but yet I've still got a child's mullet that I've been growing since COVID started last March. I said, I'm going to grow a mullet and see how long this COVID lasts. And so, yeah, I've never really grown up. So I've always been a bit of a chopsy idiot, I guess. But yeah, stories wise. Oh, I got drunk for the first time when I was 15. I drank 3 litres of White Lightning, as you do.
Classic.
Just sitting there going, oh, this is lovely. So I just drank 3 litres of White Lightning. I then stood up and everything went boom. And I went to a house party. I cried in front of all my cool friends. I smashed a pint glass over my head. I then cried for my mother. I then walked home, right? It was still light. I got home and my mother said, oh, do you want any food? And I said, yeah, can I have egg and milk? She made me egg and chips. And then I passed out in the egg. True story.
Have you ever heard the end of that from anyone involved?
Well, funny thing is, I blamed everybody who I was with. Like, I made out like they bullied me into drinking. So I wasn't allowed to speak to them again, which is lucky. Because they probably would have battered me for blaming them all. But, yeah.
Do they still get dirty looks from your mum? Because I've got a friend who won't go near my mum.
Yeah.
When I was 15, I went on my first ever date. Like, I went on a date when I was 15. And what I learned, right, is you don't take your better-looking friend on a date. Because I was like, oh, bring my friend, you bring your friend. We'll have a double date down the Lord Nelson in Old Shilton, which is obviously the way you go for dates. And her friend didn't turn up. So I turned up with my mate Ben, who was incredibly good looking. He's lost all his hair now, so we can all be smug about that. But
and
have a guess what happened. It was really awkward because when she turned up at my house, like, my mum was putting my hair in a ponytail for me because I couldn't do it on my own yet. And it just went downhill from there. But he ended up getting off with her. I walked home pissed, 15, from the pub, smashing like fences on my way home, like sobbing because the first ever day I'd gone on, this girl had got off with my best friend. And ever since then, my mum will not go near my friend Ben. This is 22 years later and he still avoids her in the street. It's brilliant.
I mean, he did you wrong there, to be honest. I'm with your mum on
this. I'm still friends with him. I don't know why, but I'm still... It wasn't even the last girlfriend he nicked off me, and I'm still friends with him.
Is he getting worse looking as he gets older, though?
Yes, he is.
Is that why you're really sticking around?
When you double date when you're 65 or something, the boot will be on the other foot, won't it?
You'll be cleaning up.
Mark, is he married?
He is married. He's got two beautiful children and recently became a hometown hero when he jumped into a river and saved a drowning child. Oh. So...
Well,
annoyingly,
I think
he secured his legacy.
I think, Mark, you should try your very, very best to take his wife from him.
I think, and his children.
Yeah, get his children to call you dad in front of him.
I'm your real dad.
You win.
Yeah. And then generously offer him a polygamous arrangement so he can join you and your already beautiful wife with another wife, and enjoy his decline.
Thank you for representing my actual wife in this conversation.
Oh yeah, obviously.
I'm glad you're on her side. Hang on, aren't you already married? I've seen a flaw in this plan. Yes, thank you. She'll appreciate
just
that.
Just reminding you, you know. in case you wanted to start a harem.
Fair enough.
Or in case your wife wanted to start a harem, you know?
I thought about it, but she will not wear the trousers.
Has your wife ever met Ben?
No.
Keep him away. No. Keep him away. If we've learned anything, Mark, keep him away.
Good the advice. Last one did. That's good advice, I think.
Just... Yeah, the last one did. She told me, oh, he's really attractive, isn't he? No! No!
Not again! Not again!
Well, I think this episode's going to be called Fuck You, Ben. We've got the title already. Yes. And that was teenage trauma category. Now we'll move on. Something more uplifted, perhaps.
Oh, can I just add to my story that I didn't drink then until I was 28.
Wow.
13 years without booze.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you had a heroin habit, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I was a big fan of the Skag,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't come from South Wales and not be and not be interested in the Skag. Like,
it's the only way. It's the only way to endure the weather, right? Essentially.
Yeah, it's the crunchy nut cornflakes of drugs. It's very, very Moorish, and it gets you through a long day.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So hang on, you didn't drink for 13 years. How long of that were you in a professional band for?
So I did this straight edge thing. So for anybody that doesn't know, there were bands in the South Wales scene who were straight edge. And because I hadn't drunk for a while,
straight
I was
edge?
Like, oh,
what's that?
It's basically you drink a drug free. It's kind of like veganism for not taking drugs and drinking, but a lot of
and
straight
veganism
edge,
as well in some cases.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And like non-casual sex and stuff. Basically, it's about trying to not harm or poison or injure your body in any way.
It's trying to not have any of the fun that you would normally have in a band.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, correct.
You picked a bad time to be straight edge there. Yeah. A lot of opportunity.
I broke edge. That's what the term is. I broke that in Japan.
Nice.
When my friend said, do you want a drink? And I said, I'll have a can of Coke. And he was like, here's a Bailey's. And I was like, okay.
Have a proper drink.
Yeah. Does it taste like sweets? He's like, very much so. I was like, I'm in. So I drank three of them and then was fortunate enough to somehow make a friend, and a Japanese lady friend. And in the morning, I woke up and thought, unbelievable, Bailey's must make me speak Japanese because I can't get over this. That's the end of that story. Sorry about that.
So you went from cider to Bailey's.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 13-year gap.
13-year gap. Yeah.
Yeah. White cider, White Lightning, the worst of all of the alcohols, to the cream-filled ladies' drink, Bailey's.
I mean, it's very tasty.
Did you stick with it? Oh, yeah. Was that your drink for a while?
I'm not against a Bailey's now and again. I've kind of stopped now, though. I've kind of stopped again now drinking for no reason, really. Just I seem to be getting a little bit fatter when I was chugging down cans on my own. So I decided to pack it in.
Yeah, that happens. Because I can't imagine being in a band and not drinking. Because my mate Andrew, who I think Ian definitely knows. I don't know if you know Andrew O'Neill.
Anyway.
Who is not straight edge by any means, yeah. Although he is militantly vegan in that he involves a gun where he can. But we were in a band together, and last time we were on tour in the US, we were on tour in America. We do that. That's the same thing we do. Yeah. We go on tour. But we were on tour in the US, and we were playing in New York, and Andrew decided that he was going to have 3 months off drinking just to prove he could. And that 3 months included a American tour. And the Glastonbury and the Edinburgh Fringe, right? Which seems like either a really good idea or a really bad one. But the saddest thing I think I've ever heard, and this is why I don't think I could go on tour without drinking, is we played in New York. We had a great show. It was really fun. We went out afterwards, obviously, and a bunch of us ended up in this cocktail bar with these people we were staying with, and everyone's drinking, and everyone's having a nice time. Andrew isn't drinking. We get to 2 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's still hammering the cocktails. We're all like, we played New York, isn't it brilliant? We had a great time. Andrew disappears. No one sees him for like half an hour, but no one really notices. Turns out he went and sat in the toilet and read his book.
Rock and roll.
Wow.
I'm sure it was a good book, but good on him.
Just go home. Just go back to the hotel. Like,
he was reading Tess of the Durbervilles as well, which is...
read. Can I tell my quick Andrew O'Neill story?
Well, it depends what it is.
So my band, The Blackout, were playing The Garage in Highbury.
Venue. I've done a gig there. It was a really good venue.
Yeah, it's awesome. So the day before we were in London and we found out Richard Herring was playing in a pub and Andrew O'Neill was main support, I think, or whatever it was. And Andrew went up on stage and did a whole bit about how London, bear in mind, I'll tell you what, it was the 6th of July, 2005, right? Andrew went on stage and did a whole section about how London was on amber alert and there would never, ever be a terrorist attack in London. We then got in our van, drove up to Highbury, where we slept in the van overnight, woke up in the morning to find out 7/7 had happened and they'd blown the top off a bus. And we woke up, every single one of us had missed phone calls and texts because obviously our Welsh family were like, oh my God, they're in London, they must be dead. Everybody had loads of texts, except for our drummer who had absolutely nothing.
Oh.
And we were like, oh, that's terrible. This family literally don't care. And then I saw Andrew, I met Andrew then in the Kerrang Awards a couple of years later, and I told him my story, and I was like, I think it might be because of you that happened, because you were really pushing it that night. He was like, it's never going to happen, we can be on amber alert, and I might be your fault, and but yeah.
I mean, that's quite a big allegation there, I think, but yeah.
I'm not saying Andrew O'Neill is involved with terrorist organisations, but he's definitely involved with terrorist organisations.
In that case, when I saw him filling out that form on the aeroplane, he was absolutely lying to the US government.
They don't catch anyone out with that, do they? Are you involved in terrorism? Who ticks that box?
Yes. Oh, shit. Can I have another one? Can I have another one? I ticked the wrong one.
I'll tell you what. So speaking of the Garage Highbury, right, I once saw Paul Weller there and Bruce Foxton came out and played Start With Him. Now, I thought that's a really interesting thing to happen, but I don't really know any context about those two individuals. And I wondered if anybody on this call might have some more information why that was an important thing that could have happened.
I never really kept up with what was going on when they weren't together, to be honest with you. As soon as Paul, you're so young, you guys, as soon as Paul broke up the Jam, I just thought, I don't want anything to do with you for a while. And I sort of didn't listen to him for about 15 years. Because when you're, 19, and your favourite band break up for no reason, you think, what? Why have you done that? What? And then you form the Style Council, and you're wearing what? And it all didn't make any sense to me because I like anger in my music, right? I've been listening to Radiohead for the last 3 days and I'm fucking pissed off, but you just, because that's what happens when you listen to them. But I like anger, and when they broke up, I don't think they even speak still, and it's such a shame. But I guess when you're in a band and you're doing all the work, you can get a bit resentful, can't you, perhaps?
Yeah.
I honestly, I don't know much about their relationship.
To bridge the Welsh Jam divide here, the reason that the Manic Street Preachers talked Richie Edwards into joining their band is because they didn't want to be a trio because they fucking hated the Jam.
Really? I used to...
Which is mad because I fucking hate the Manic Street Preachers. So...
And there's three of them now. And they didn't stop.
Of them now, for shit.
Yeah, I think they've accepted it now.
Yeah, that sounds like them, doesn't it? I want to get Nicky Wire on here because he's really fun. He was on like the Adam Buxton podcast and he was so good on it. But why do you hate them, Sean? Is it because they achieved what the Blackout didn't? Or,
oh, you bitch. You fucking bitch. Oh, like that, is it? Okay.
From a place of jealousy, or what's the...
No, not really. It came from the fact that they were another boring indie rock band when I was into metal and new metal, I suppose. You know, this is going to really hurt Ian, and I think it's probably going to... If he had an opinion of me anyway, it's about to get lower. At the time, I was in love with Limp Bizkit, right? So to listen to the Manic Street Preachers and all that indie nonsense, right? Get away. Get out of here. I'm not having it. So then I didn't mind the Stereophonics, but I think that's because he lived a bit closer to me. but I was never into the manic.
I was in a band in the mid-90s that covered both Limp Bizkit's version of George Michael's Faith and Design for Life by the Manic Street Preachers. Oh, so, you know, you can bridge those divides. Yeah, you can.
Limp Very Biscuit. Specific wedding band.
Limp Bizkit were always, whenever I used to scan through the music channels on Sky and you get to the Kerrang one, and it was always Limp Bizkit or Blink. What are they called?
Two,
Blink,
yeah.
One of the numbers, and it was one of them, and it always seemed to be one of them, and it was the same song done by different bands, as far as I could tell. But that's what makes the world go around, Sean. Right?
New metal is a genre that peaked in the first 10 seconds of the first song on the first Korn album, and it was all downhill from
you
there. My issue.
Wow, this is turning into a bit of a bullying Sean episode, but I'm fine with it. I'll take it.
That first 10 seconds of the first song of the first Korn album is exceptional. It's really good. But then Jonathan Davis shouts, "Are you ready?" And it's like, it's so good. He was just checking.
Mark.
Yeah, but I don't
it's
like...
just being polite, Mark.
I don't like all that. I was at Glastonbury one year and Dizzy Rascal, after every song, went, "Make some noise, Glastonbury." Honestly. And my son, who was only 9 at the time, looked at me and went, "He's the one with the microphone. Maybe he should make some noise."
That is amazing.
I thought it was very sweet. I went, "You're right, Alexander. Yes, I agree.
Nice.
He's got an entire sound system. We're just us.
You've not seen Dizzy Rascal until you've experienced him in a Portaloo backstage while he's playing, which I did once at the Benicassim Festival in Spain.
Experienced him? I don't understand.
I want more
information. Yes.
In a Portaloo as well.
He was not on the spacious stage. He was on the stage. I would happily, but not
was,
in this occasion.
Was that the only venue they offered him to play?
He was playing the main proper stage. I'd not been watching, but I was there doing stand up, and then I'd gone to see the Stone Roses, who my girlfriend had gone to watch Dizzy Rascal. She said the Stone Roses was just guitar solos and a bloke shouting, which is true, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. Ooh. But then I couldn't get to the stage with Dizzy Rascal. Desperately needed a poo. All the toilets are horrible because it's a festival. And I was like, I'll nip backstage. No one's going to be busy. He's on. Went and sat in the plastic portaloo and then realised that a plastic portaloo behind a stage where a major hip-hop artist is playing with thumping bass acts as a kind of resonator.
That would work, I imagine.
And it was like having a shit inside the bass speaker.
Probably shake it out of you.
No, it does. When you go to a club and you're standing by the speakers, it does make you think, oh, I'll just nip to the loo for a bit, doesn't it? Is that then, just me? I don't know. Maybe it's just a certain age thing.
You've got Tessa the d'Urbervilles in your bag. You think you're already sat down.
I've never been to a club and had a reed, I'll be honest with you. That's a bit weird. Somebody banging on the toilet door. What are you doing in there? You're doing drugs. No, I'm halfway through chapter 14.
In my mind, Dizzy Rascal was in the toilet with you, Mark, and you're not going to change it. That's how I anticipated that story.
It would have been a lot more fun if that was the case, but also in a Portaloo. No one does that.
Give us another subject, Vix. Come on. Playing a game.
It was unpopular opinions, but we've already covered quite a few.
I've got so many, though.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
He seems like such a pacific soul, doesn't he, Sean? I'm amazed.
Well, give us an unpopular opinion, then.
Come on, then.
How many do we need?
One to start with.
Yeah. Let everyone else have a turn.
Okay. Mark Watson owes the first 5 to 10 years of his career and all of the money he made to the Welsh government, right? Or he should be hung outside of Cardiff Castle for all of us to watch. That's one of them. That's one.
Well, like,
all of that lucrative Magnus Pear cider money.
Yeah, 100% pear. It's made from 100% pear, so give me that cash. Yeah, I'm not having it.
He did do a Welsh accent for the first 10 years. I thought he was Welsh until...
We all did.
I was in the pub with him one time. We were sitting outside the pub on the same road as the Comedy Store. And he'd been chatting away in the Welsh accent like he does, because I thought he was Welsh. And then this guy comes up and then he starts talking to me in like he's from the West Country, because he's from the West Country, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought... I was sat there thinking, why are you talking to me in not your accent?
Like, really have weird. I had a stroke? Did he definitely?
It was a really weird moment. And I said to him, what? I don't understand why. He says, oh, no, I'm actually from the West Country. And then this guy came up and said, nice show earlier. And he turned to him and in a Welsh accent went, oh, thank you very much. And then came back to me and started being Bristolian again. And I thought, I don't know what's going on here. So I have some sympathy with your unpopular opinion.
Yeah,
really. I'm not sure how to work it out. But
I don't mean to sound like a racist, but he is coming over you and stealing our jobs. And I'm not having it. Right. So that's one of my...
There's an invoice going to Mark Watson on behalf of the Welsh, the whole country of Wales. All right.
I've gone further. I've written down Mark Watson does 24-hour charity streams due to the guilty feelings he has for ripping off the Welsh. There you go. I've written that down as well.
Okay. So you've got a tight 5 minutes on this then.
I could go on him. Let somebody else go before I say something else that probably is unpopular.
I find as I get older, I stop having unpopular opinions. I stop hating things. Like, I'm nearly 40 now, and somebody was like, oh, what music do you really hate? And I was like, actually, I can't think of anything.
New metal.
I used to say I hated new metal, but I don't actually. Some of those songs are quite good. Like, actually, there's some, you know, I used to say I hated Linkin Park. And now you listen and think, actually, that's all right. I used to say I hated Take That. And then you go back and listen to Take That. No, those records are great. And I've realised that all the stuff, all of the hate that used to fuel me, like, it just seems to have dissipated, particularly about art, particularly about music and films. I just can't, like, if people find joy in it, I've started going, yeah, all right. Yeah, no, if you want to listen to the Saturdays, that sounds right. Yeah, it's nice.
Because you spend a lot of time on Twitter, though, Mark, which might have dulled your edge.
Normally Twitter stokes hate.
Well, Twitter's made me the angry, hate-filled shithead that I'm becoming in this very moment. So, yeah, it's nice to hear that somebody can get away from me, though. So that's nice, Mark. Congratulations.
Something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it just means I'm getting boring. I don't know.
No. But... it just means you're sort of... You've only got one life. You can't... I don't follow Piers Morgan, right? I don't hate him. I just... don't like to listen to him that much. So rather than follow him, I just dismiss him from my life. And life's a lot easier then, I find. So I'm with you.
Actually, you know what? I do fucking hate
that. Yeah, fair enough. But I haven't got too much time for that anymore. But you're right. You're right. Do you know what? Actually, I think the more interesting question is, what do you find offensive? And the only thing I find offensive is shit comedy or shit music or... shit art.
I'm off then. Bye.
I was going to say, you could have just raised this before the show. You didn't have to tell us to our faces.
Genuinely, I just find it offensive. But, you know, I don't care about all the other stuff, but people not making an effort, that really pisses me off.
Is it the quality then that you, because obviously comedy and art is very subjective. So what is it that gets your goat about?
If somebody's, oh, well, this is going to sound soody as fuck, but if somebody's true to themselves and their voice, then I don't really give it. I mean...
Are you talking about Mark Watson again?
Let's get him!
No, well, Mark no longer does the Welsh accent, actually. But no, I'm not talking about Mark Watson. It's quite funny, though, when I think about it. I used to hate him with a passion.
Even
though we gig together quite a bit. Anyway, the point is, I don't have unpopular opinions, particularly.
Which comedians are shit? You can tell us.
Which comedians are shit?
Yeah, come on.
I've only got about 7 minutes. I couldn't possibly list them all. There are so many. My God, there are so many. But we're not going down that road, are we? I'm really happy for anyone who gets laughs. Although there was a comedian who I won't name, who did steal a joke off another comedian. The joke was, what's your girlfriend's name? Figment, right? Figment. It's quite a funny little joke. And this comedian took the joke and went to this woman in the front row, what's your girlfriend's name? Pigment. And everyone went, what? What the
fuck? No.
That sort of shit that can stop it, can get in the bin or get in the sea or whatever you kids say nowadays. No, there's plenty of comedians. Oh, my God. Loads and loads. But hey, it doesn't matter who they are.
Let me just call up my list of Facebook friends and I'll start reading out the ones.
We all agree, though, don't we? We all agree. The comics, I imagine the musicians are exactly the same. You know, everyone thinks that Radiohead are brilliant, right? Because they are. Even if you don't like the music. Really, Sean? really? Don't that really? Wow. I am starting. You're starting to piss me off now. Anyway.
I don't know. Here
comes an unpopular opinion.
You've not experienced Radiohead until you've listened to them on headphones walking around Primark. It really sharpens the experience. It turns it into this dystopian.
That sounds like literally two of the worst things I could ever imagine, listening to Radiohead while walking around Primark.
Really? God.
Yeah. Listening to.
I like that we have different opinions, but I'm not sure they're unpopular.
No.
Can't really help you there.
I mean, I did vote opposite to apparently most of the country in the last couple of public elections I've voted in. So I guess I do have unpopular opinion.
Statistically, yes.
What?
Wait, so hang on a minute. So who did you...
Has Mark just come out as a Tory on you?
I'm wondering.
No, because the Tories won and I didn't vote for them. So by definition, I must have had an unpopular opinion.
I see what you did there.
Because that's lucky.
The way democracy works... like I keep voting for things and the thing I voted for doesn't win.
So hey, I'm 20 years on and the same shit's still going on, all right? Is all I can tell you. But I imagine our opinions would probably accord with most people we follow on Twitter as well then.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, because I've tried doing it the other way to try and get out of my bubble and you know, experience other people's point of views. And actually, it's just horrible.
Massively triggering, I know. You think, I'll follow this person for a while because it'll be good for me to have a balanced view. And then the first time you read a tweet, you go, what the fuck? That shit. And then you start banging. I don't like it on social media, really. I mean, I'm on there, but I don't like it because people start saying to me, oh, well, you're Jewish. What do you think about Israel and Palestine? So I then write back going, what? 2,000 years of history, 140 characters. I'm not sure you can get the nuance of the conflict, right? And this guy then comes back to me and goes, what? It's not conflict, it's genocide. And you think, fuck off. That's why I don't talk about this shit.
Oh, see, I just had to just wait and the unpopular opinions just started coming out.
Unpopular opinion.
You bide your time, don't you?
Yeah.
Right, let's crack on. I reckon this is probably going to be the last one based on our hit rate.
Go on then.
All right. And we're going to go with petty crime.
Oh, what?
Sean, you must have eyes on this. You look like a criminal.
Oh, nice.
A little bit. You got a little bit of criminality.
I love it when everyone makes friends.
Yeah. You don't like Radiohead. You must be a criminal.
It wasn't that.
No.
Wasn't that? But yeah, fair enough. Go with that if you want to make yourself feel better.
Is it you, Sean?
I mean, I don't know who likes this subject, by the way. Have we all done petty crime?
But I have.
I've got a petty crime story.
Go on,
Mark, you go first.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for Sean's.
He's choosing which one.
Yeah,
I'll tell you about my criminal. Yeah. I'll tell you about my criminal record.
Ooh, yeah. All right.
I have a criminal record, right? Because in 2011, I travelled between Elephant and Castle and King's Cross in first class with a standard class ticket, right? And
rebel, absolute rebel.
Oh, I'm committing crime all the time then, Jesus.
And this bloke, this little Weasley fucking bloke, actually said, can I see your ticket? I was like, it's the wrong ticket, sorry, but I'm getting off for the next star. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. And he then, well, sir, I need to tell you that you have the right to remain silent, but anything you say. And I was like, what? And he wasn't a policeman. He was a fucking train guard. And then I had to go to court. I got a court summons. I had to wear a fucking suit and go to court in the middle of London. And the court was full of people, all of which had been caught by the same bloke, the same little cunt, who must have been on some sort of fucking, like, must have been on money for it.
Because he's wasting valuable court time with petty grievances.
Because his job is to walk around trains giving people fines for sitting in the wrong
things
seat.
Things they've not paid for.
So why didn't you pay the fine? Because he had you banged to rights, though.
He did, and I paid the fine. I turned up at court. I feel glad
to know that happened.
I paid the fine. Every single person in that courtroom had been caught by the same bloke.
Good.
And I now have a letter somewhere that says, you are being summoned to appear in court for the, and contrary to the Railways Act of 1850, whatever, for the non-payment of a fee of £2.20.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost makes you think that maybe you should have paid it. and then you wouldn't have had this shit. Do you know what I mean?
I never got you for such a railway Nazi.
It's not being Nazi.
He just likes justice.
I just feel that people should, if somebody sat in first class and you haven't paid for first class, that seems a bit unfair to me. Paid more money.
The loophole is weekend upgrade, where you can pay like 20 quid to be in there and you're next to someone who's paid 300.
Oh. Don't give a shit about that. If somebody's paid the upgrade, that's fine.
I know.
I got nabbed for not paying the fare once. This was years ago. So, you know, I've learnt my lesson.
Well, I've not done it again. I've not reoffended. So, yeah.
There you go.
But this is one of those little rubbish trains that go for that shuttle between like King's Cross and Bedford and Brighton and back. And the first class is literally just a tea towel draped over the back of the seat. That's the only difference.
I've got that train. Yeah. I've often sat there as well.
Thamesley.
I didn't realise that was a crime.
No, I didn't think it was a crime. I thought you just got fined and that was it.
I had to go. It wasn't just a fine. I had to go to the magistrate's court. It was an actual criminal charge.
Ian's love of Mark's sadness is next level.
He's thrilled. Ian is absolutely thrilled by that story.
I think what happens is I haven't got more conservative because I definitely. You know, people drop in litter, shit like that.
That's a genuine social. That's a genuine like social horror, though, isn't it? That's actually gonna like mess people's lives.
Stealing a
first
class seat.
There was no one sat in it. It was three stops from Elephant and Castle and King's Cross.
Yeah, I see.
Tell it to the magistrate. You did.
I did. And I told him that I was like, I'm waiting for my visa application. I've got to go and do some shows, and I'm really worried that this is
America would because will America let you in with a criminal record?
It turns out if you've not actually been arrested, there is no way that that prosecution can be traced.
So you lied on an ESTA form as well.
Uh-oh.
Have you been arrested, Sean? You ever been arrested?
No, I don't think so. Once when I was about 10, one of the bigger boys dared me to go into the shop. Well, not dared me, pretty much said, if you don't go in there and steal something, we're going to beat you up. It's kind of like I guess
it's always someone else's fault with you, isn't it, Sean?
American gang culture. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
always
it is.
Someone
that's
else.
Pretty good.
But yeah, Philip Thomas, if you're listening, right, you're a right shithead and you've got me in a lot of trouble. So I went into the shop and I was like, fuck, what can I steal? And you're not gonna believe this. I literally stole a pen top. The top off a pen. Because he said anything, you've got to steal anything, or we're gonna beat you up. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll get a I came out, pen top. He took the pen top off me, walked straight in the shop and told the shopkeeper I'd just stolen it. And then a week later, I was at my house and my mother said, come downstairs. And I came downstairs and I saw a shadow in the room. And I thought, oh, it's my older brother. It's like my half brother or whatever. I haven't seen him for a while. And I came in and the shopkeeper had told the police. And the police had come to my house to give me, you know, I was like 10. They basically come to put the shit at me.
Yeah.
For stealing a pen top.
Incredible.
I couldn't get over it.
I see your mate. You're not mates with this Richard Thomas, is it anymore?
Philip
Thomas.
Yeah. Philip
Thomas. Fucking hell, there's no need for that.
Yeah.
What a bastard! Like, yeah.
That's so harsh.
All right, I've got. I mean, this is I was sharing a flat. I was a drug dealer for a while, right? I was sharing a flat with two drug dealers and I used to sort of answer the door and show people in, right? I was like an usher, you know, front of house for a drug
concierge.
Yeah. I said, come in this way, sit down, we'll make your tea. His mum turned up once. The main dealer's mum turned up, Madeline, her name was. And I sat in the kitchen with her while about seven people came along and bought drugs and left. And she goes to me, I tell you what, young people today, they don't even stop for a cup of tea, do they? They just, they've got no time for anyone, have they? I went, no, Madeline, bless her. Anyway, me and these two drug dealer fellas, we wanted to go down. There was an Indian guru called the Bhagwani Rajneesh in the 60s and 70s, the one that the Beatles hung out with. He had a place in Belsize Park And they used to talk about the fact that there was free love going on. So we're about 19, 20. So we thought, well, maybe we'll go down there and we'll see some shagging or get laid or something, right? It's ridiculous. Anyway, we went down there and my friend Ali nicked the stereo out of one of the studios, just wandered out with the stereo. So me, I'm always about 2 feet behind going, yeah, go on, that'd be nice. I've never really a criminal.
Petty crime adjacent.
Yes, that's the nearest I've ever got. On one other time when I tried to do, I opened up a comedy club and I did a load of fly posting and these two coppers caught, I had a bucket of paste and some marigold gloves on. And these two coppers caught me with my bucket and my marigolds. I went, what are you doing? As I pinned a Milestone Comedy Club on a box I shouldn't, like a telephone box or something. And they said, give us, and they took the gloves and the paste away.
Oh.
That's the nearest I got, really, to a life of crime.
Yeah, well, that was just close enough, I think, after, you know, we've got someone with a criminal record here who is the sexiest really. Criminal amongst us.
Yeah.
I just realized Mark is like there's me going, oh, you're rebel. And he literally is the only one here with a record for it. Yeah. So he wins. Yeah. Well done, Mark. Well done.
Yeah. That is definitely a win for you.
That I think makes me the edgiest one.
It's so edgy.
That's a thing I fucking hate. Edgy fucking comedians can fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I'm edgy. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go fuck yourself. You know what I mean, though, Mark?
That's an edgy opinion.
Oh, God, yeah. And then I raped her.
Yeah,
you get less of it these days.
It's just less of it gets off open mic because I did 100 gigs in a year. So I have seen hundreds of these acts. They still exist. I once got told off by someone outside because he did an ironic set about being like a murdering lady stalker. And I didn't laugh at it because I just didn't think it was very funny. It was like, I don't care. You can do whatever set you want. But I was like, I'm not laughing at that because it's not funny to me. And he came to me at the end and said that I hadn't understand it. And it was ironic. He was like, no, you don't understand. It was irony. I'm not that guy. I was playing a character. I was like, yeah, but I just don't find that character funny.
Yeah.
So that's my feedback. And then he got a woman who he was with to come and testify that he wasn't like that. And it was a joke. And I was like, no, I understand.
I know he's not actually a stalker.
Very good.
Yeah. You know, I understand. It's just shit.
It's just shit. Well, that's the problem, you see. Sure, it's comedy in the wrong hands. That's the problem, right? You can talk about whatever. I did a joke. This was just after Madeleine McCann disappeared. And I was talking about how her parents went to see the Pope. And I thought, well, if anyone knows about perverts abducting small children, it's the head of the Catholic Church. And I did this joke. And then this is on stage at a gig. And then I told a story, this true story about the week after Madeleine had been taken. I went to the cup final with my mate, Simon. And 5 minutes before the cup final started, they made an announcement. Has anyone seen Madeleine McCann? And he leaned over to me and went, well, she's not here. He said it was hard enough for us to get tickets. I told, and it's very, very funny, right? It is probably funny. And I told the story page at the comedy store. And this woman, what was interesting was this woman looked up at me and she said, she really was angry with me. And I said, what? And she said, you're saying that stuff. You obviously don't have children. And I lost it. I went, I do have children. And what's more, I know where they fucking are.
Right? I was just about to say that.
I know, no. Which was, what was interesting was they did laugh, the audience, but they also didn't really want to go down that road of blaming the parents, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously I had to lighten it. I said, listen, they're in a chalet 50 yards away. The window's open. They'll be fine, right?
And, oh, God, and, you doubled down.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, but I was looking for the laugh to get out, you know what I mean? Because I didn't want it to be me slagging off the parents. There was a point to this story. I can't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. I just
edgy comedians.
There. Edgy, yeah. So I don't have a problem with edgy material. Frankie Boyle, and he's brilliant. He can say whatever, but you know, it's when shit comedians get hold of this stuff, and then I just go no. But, put that paedophile joke down.
But they justify it because they're like, oh no, people didn't like it because I'm edgy. And it's like, no, it was badly written. Yeah, people didn't like it because it was shit. Yeah. You don't get to say that.
Yeah, I. You can genuinely write jokes about anything. Like, you really can if you're good enough to do it. And like, and I will forgive most things if they make me. If occasionally you get somebody dusting it and you go, and it is a bit close to the bone and it is a little bit unpleasant, but it elicits that laugh out of you that you couldn't quite stop yourself from doing. And in which case, you kind of like, fair
play. You got me.
That was. I mean, I don't agree, but that
before
was
before I filtered
funny.
It. It resonated.
Yeah.
Right. We've run out of time actually, because I know. We could go on and on, but we have to go around and talk about what everybody's doing with their lives while I do the maths on the points that I've been racking up for you. So, Sean, what are you doing with your life?
What? Oh, me?
Yeah.
You say Sean. Sorry.
I just thought you were thinking about what you were doing with your life. It's like not an existential question. It was very practical.
Yeah. I was just about to start crying. what am I doing? I do a podcast called Sappening Podcast with Sean Smith. Which is basically me talking to me and my co-host Morgan talking to rock stars and people from the music business. We've had actors on, we've had WWE wrestlers on. Yeah, we've had comedians on as well. Doing that. And I do a band called Raiders as well, which, as we talked about in the beginning, is not as good as my old band, according to Vix. So
I've grown up a little bit since. So there's like nostalgia associated with that that I can't
take away. I've got more miserable, which is why you probably don't like the newer band stuff, because it is more miserable and about me just hating myself constantly. So that might be why. So yeah, check that out.
They were very good live. They were one of the last gigs I saw. I think before lockdown.
Oh yeah,
lockdown,
you saw us before the funeral for a friend. Yeah, and I ended that set with "Fuck the Tories."
Yes,
you
did.
That was good. Shepherd's Bush Empire.
That was one of Funeral for a Friend's last ever shows. I've been to three now, and now they're just bloody touring again. So I feel a little bit cheated.
It's going to be the last. I think this next run is. They're not like Slayer or Ozzy Osbourne, who literally will not stop touring. Funeral for a Friend, I think it's going to be like their last tour now over the next year, because they're doing Download as well, I think. So
I'm not crying through history again for them. They're catfishing me. I'm not having it.
Welsh post-hardcore band from Bridgend. What's post-hardcore?
It's shouting, mainly shouting with a bit of singing, good choruses with angsty "I didn't get on with my dad" type verses.
Right. Okay.
And a bit of texture. It's got a bit of texture
in it. Ian, where can we find you? Tell us about your book.
You can find me at home, to be honest. I haven't been out in about a year. Just sitting here, just, you know, waiting for bin day to come round so I can just have something exciting happen in my life. I'm doing a bit of telly on BT Sport, and I've written a book called "To Be Someone," about the Jam. I bet it's an autobiography, part autobiography, part social history, and part love letter to Paul Weller and the Jam. And Paul Weller gave me a quote on the front cover. "I really like this book," he said. "I'd forgotten how shit it was in the 70s. He said that. He phoned me up and said that to me.
No way.
Yeah, no, he phoned me up. He goes, "Ian, it's Paul Weller." And I wanted to go, "I know, I'd recognise that voice anywhere."
You get this number?
I went, "Oh, hi, Paul." And then that's the first thing he said to me. "I really like this book. I'd forgotten how shit it was in the 70s. And I said, "Can I use that as a quote?" And he went, "Yes, of course you can." He's been very nice about the whole thing. And Phil Jupitus drew some really brilliant cartoons in the book as well. Just lovely artwork. And it's nice because Phil used to open for the Stoll Council when he was Porky the Poet about 100 years ago. So Weller's likes that about it. So it's a nice thing, and I'm proud of it. And it talks about me and growing up in London in the 70s and what it was like. So that's what I've been doing.
Amazing.
What was it called?
It's called "To Be Someone."
Right, I knew it didn't.
"To Be Someone," yep. And it's I think it's funny as well. Hopefully,
cool. We'll let you know. You know, no one here holds back. Really,
I get that.
Yeah, I'm gonna tweet you going, oh fucking hell, it turns out the '70s did sound shit. I was right, the '70s did sound awful.
What are you doing with your life, Mark?
I've got one book that came out last year, The Magic of Terry Pratchett, which is the first proper biography of Terry Pratchett. People seem to like it. You can find that on all the normal book places. Vix read a very early version of it for me, which I was very pleased.
It was so good as well. And my friend's a massive Terry Pratchett fan. And I texted her and I was like, oh, there's a book coming out you're going to love. And then it was even better when you finished it, as books genuinely are.
I hope so. So I'm actually writing two books simultaneously at the minute, which, as it turns out, is a stupid idea. I'm editing a book about the Manic Street Preachers.
Sean's favourite band. Which
can I give a foreword? I'll give a foreword. What a load of bollocks, Sean Smith.
It's actually just I've got loads of journalists I know have written, or like interesting people have written an essay basically on every Mannix album. So that's coming out. That should be out this year.
The other one's about your life of crime, isn't it?
It's called The Great Train Robbery. The other one is I'm writing a book called The London Boys. It's called The London Boys, The Teenage Dreams of David Bowie and Mark Bolan. And it's about the relationship between Bowie and Bolan and kind of what we can tell about the 60s and 60s and 70s music based on how they operated and which one got famous first and who stayed famous. And so I'm working on that. That's taking up most of my brain space.
You should talk to Steve Jameson, who plays Sol Bernstein, the character, because he used to play with Mark Bolan. They were good friends.
I knew that, and I was going to try and track him down. So if you could hook me up,
Really all useful. The Jews know each other. It's all right.
It's true.
It isn't untrue. It isn't untrue. We do.
It's like that with Welsh people as well. It's really annoying when people go, oh my God, you're Welsh. Do you know? And you're ready to be annoyed. And you're like, no, actually, I do know them. I used to work with them. Yeah. Right. So, yeah. That is true. That happened. Right. So, Ian, you were the winner with 21 points, which is actually quite a high score for this type of game.
Thank you. I didn't really feel like we were playing the game that much, but I'm glad, you know, thank you.
Points are allocated by how much I enjoyed each of your stories, but it was very close. So, you are the worthy winner. You've won absolutely nothing, but you do get to go after this. You're free. And thanks to everybody for listening to Comedy Arcade. There will be a new episode out next Thursday.
Oh, nice. So we don't get to find out if I came last, which I'm expecting to have come last. This was just Ian's one, and that's it, is it?
And that's it.
Thanks for listening to The Comedy Arcade. There'll be a new episode next Thursday with new balls and new guests. If you liked it, like us any way you can and subscribe and tell all your friends. Also, tell us. We're in all the usual places on all the social media. And if you didn't like it, I've been Menkind, a fella from Bake Off and Mark Watson talking about feelings.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.